This podcast, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, The Case of the Speckled Band, was performed by Gotham Radio Theater in March of 2013. The cast included J.T. O'Connor, Victor Barbella, Vince Traney, Sarah Amalia, and Laura Leopard. It was directed and adapted by Sidney Grossberg-Ranga. We hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Gotham Radio Theater. Our sponsor this week will be Chevrolet. And now, welcome your host for this evening's performance, Charles Napier.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Gotham Radio Theater. It is thrilling to be here once more. This is my third time playing Sherlock Holmes in as many seasons, and I promise you, this time I'll get it right. No, seriously, if you saw last season, you know what I mean. But I would like to take this opportunity, if you would, to shut off those small electronic telephones that everyone seems... Oh, come on in, folks, come on in. It's all right. If you could take the time to shut off those small electronic telephones that everyone seems to be carrying around these days, because they do interfere with the microphones. Oops, sorry. And I hear the ringtone on them can be quite loud. And also, you can put your favorite song to its ringtone or something, you know. I could just imagine Cab Calloway's Minnie the Moocher taking us right out of the 1890s. Right, Mr. Bailey? Is his off? Good, just checking. Good. Now, I have some very exciting news this go-round. We have a new Dr. Watson. Unfortunately, Smokey Adams was, well, he made himself unavailable somehow, and I had absolutely nothing to do with it. But we are very, very delighted to have a very familiar face to Gotham Radio listeners, our very own Mr.
Stuart Spencer.
Stuart Spencer, ladies and gentlemen, keep warm. Thank you so much. It's good to see you again. Good seeing you, Stu.
Charles.
Charles.
Oh, you know, I have to tell you something very funny.
Yes.
One of our bosses at the Columbia Broadcasting Station actually wanted us to recast Watson with a short, glamorous Eurasian woman. Like that would ever work. So we're really happy that you stepped in at the last minute.
Oh,
really,
no problem. You know, between you and me, that was actually pretty sudden, Charles. What happened there with Smokey?
Oh, nothing. He just had a scheduling conflict with a film or something, and he couldn't be in town.
Oh, he couldn't be in town, yeah. Actually, he was at 21 last night. I saw him last night.
And, yes,
He was talking about his experience working with you. He said
yes.
A lot about drunken rage.
No. Yes. We should like to thank the nice folks at Chevrolet for letting us hit the road in their brand new...
Speaking of hitting the road, he said you were hitting the bottle a lot while you were actually off stage.
Yes. We all love to hit the road in our Chevrolets. We all know that being in your Chevrolet is like sitting in your living room. It drives like a dream.
Yeah, speaking of dreams, Smokey said working with you.
Yes. Louis, take it away. Judy.
USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all. So make a date today to see the USA and see it in your Chevrolet.
Thank you, Judy Ravine.
You're welcome.
And Louis Guglielmo for that lovely rendition. And Judy will be back playing our heroine this evening, Miss Helen Stoner.
Hello, Judy.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Good.
Hey, Judy.
Hi.
Hey, you have a Chevrolet, don't you?
I sure do. My boyfriend, manager Vinny, bought me a beautiful red Chevy. I drove it right onto the lot this morning. I was waving to you, and you blew me a big, beautiful kiss.
Yes. And rounding out our cast, reprising her unflappable Mrs. Hudson, the delightful, talented Irene Dahlia.
I love to see Irene upon the silver screen.
Beautiful. She gets her own theme song.
A goddess of art.
She plays the Bloomin' Housekeeper. What'd I miss?
Dahlia's the doll for me.
God.
Thank you, Louis. Thank you, Charles.
Yes.
So lovely to be here.
Yes, Irene, I loved you in Present Laughter, and I so look forward to seeing you in the upcoming The 20th Century.
Ah, yes, The 20th Century with my good friend, Mr. Jando. Oh, and I love your films too, Charles.
Thank you.
The last one was with Lassie, right?
Yes, it was.
Hey, didn't Lassie try to bite you when you were on the set?
Louis, save me. Louis, hit it.
Gotham Radio Theatre presents Sherlock Holmes, The Case of the Speckled Band by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. We now find ourselves on Baker Street. It is early on an April morning in 1883, and no one at number 21 has stirred yet. A young woman is finding her way up the street looking for the proper address.
I'm coming. Oh, my, who could be calling so early?
Is this the office of a Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Why, yes, it is, my dear. Are you in need of Mr. Holmes's services?
I believe I am. I didn't know where else to turn, and a friend mentioned Mr. Holmes, and so...
Well, dearie, let's get you in out of the chill morning air. Right this way. You settle yourself in, and I'll light the fire. Are you from nearby?
No, I travelled from Surrey this morning.
Oh, goodness. Have you had your tea?
No, I left before the house was awake. I didn't want anyone to know where I was going. I really must see Mr. Holmes.
There, dearie. This fire should take the chill off. I'll go wake Mr. Holmes and make you a bit of breakfast.
Oh, please don't go to any trouble.
Oh, it's no trouble at all. I'll be back soon.
Thank you.
Mr. Holmes? Mr. Holmes!
Yes, Mrs. Hudson, I have the bell. I'm overstressed.
Well, of course you did. I'm going to go put up the tea. There is a young lady waiting for you in the sitting room. She seems very upset. She's come all the way in from Surrey.
Is she alone?
Yes, she is.
A very good, Mrs. Hudson. You see to the tea. I'll go and wake Dr. Watson.
Yes, sir.
Holmes?
Very sorry to knock you up, Watson, but it's the common lot this morning. Mrs. Hudson has been knocked up. She retorted upon me and I on you.
Oh, what is it then? A fire? Oh, good God, it's only 7:15.
No, a client. It seems that the young lady has arrived in a considerable state of excitement, who insists upon seeing me as she's waiting in the sitting room. Now, when young ladies wander about the metropolis at this hour of the morning and knock sleepy people out of their beds, I presume that it is something very pressing which they have to communicate. Should it prove to be an interesting case, you would, I am sure, wish to follow it from the outset? I thought, at any rate, since you are new to my methods, I should call on you and give you the chance.
My dear fellow, I would not miss it for anything. One of my newest pleasures is in following Holmes in his professional investigations, and in admiring the rapid deductions, swift as intuitions, and yet always founded on a logical basis with which he unravels the problems which are submitted to him. So, I rapidly threw on my clothes and was ready to, in a few minutes, to accompany my friend down to the sitting room.
Ah, good morning, madam. My name is Sherlock Holmes, and this is my intimate friend and associate, Dr. Watson, before whom you can speak as freely as before myself. Ah, I am glad to see that Mrs. Hudson has had the good sense to light a fire. Pray, draw up to it, for I see that you are shivering.
It is not cold which makes me shiver.
What, though?
It is fear, Mr. Holmes. It is terror.
You must not fear, my dear lady. We shall soon set matters right, I have no doubt. You have come in by train this morning, I see.
You know me, then?
No, but I observed the second half of a return ticket in the palm of your left glove. You must have started early, and yet you have had a good drive in a dog cart along heavy roads before you reached the station.
Why, how could you possibly?
Well, there is no mystery, my dear madam. The left arm of your jacket is spattered with mud in no less than 7 places. The marks are perfectly fresh. There is no vehicle save a dog cart, which throws up mud in that way, and then only when you sit on the left-hand side of the driver.
Whatever your reasons may be, you are perfectly correct. I started from home before 6, reached Leatherhead at 20 past, and came in by the first train to Waterloo. Sir, I can stand this strain no longer. I shall go mad if it continues. I have no one to turn to, none save only one who cares for me, and he, poor fellow, can be of little aid. I have heard of you, Mr. Holmes. I have heard of you from Mrs. Farintosh, whom you helped in the hour of her sore need.
Farintosh?
It was from her that I had your address. Oh, sir, do you not think that you could help me too, and at least throw a little light through the dense darkness which surrounds me?
Farintosh. Ah, yes, here it is. Yes, I recall the case. It was concerned with an opal tiara. I think it was before your time, Watson.
No, it must have been. I do not recall either the name or the tiara. Please, miss, continue.
At present, it is out of my power to reward you for your services. But in a month or 6 weeks, I shall be married, with the control of my own income. And then, at least, you shall not find me ungrateful.
I can only say, madam, that I shall be happy to devote the same care to your case as I did to that of your friend. As to reward, my profession is its own reward, but you are at liberty to defray whatever expenses I may be put to at the time which suits you best.
Here you are, dear. Tea and toast. And the gentlemen have arrived. Oh, there's plenty for you all.
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
Miss... Why, I didn't even ask your name.
I am Miss Helen Stoner.
Well, Miss Stoner, how do you take your tea?
You may leave us now, Mrs. Hudson.
Don't worry, Mrs. Hudson. I'll be mother and serve the tea.
Why, I can always count on you, can't I, Doctor?
Of course.
That will be all, Mrs. Hudson.
Ring if you need anything.
And how do you take your tea, Miss Stoner?
Light, no sugar.
And now I beg that you will lay before us everything that may help us in forming an opinion upon the matter which brings you here at such an early hour.
Alas, the very horror of my situation lies in the fact that my fears are so vague and my suspicions depend so entirely upon small points which might seem trivial to another. Thank you, Dr. Watson.
Yes, Holmes?
Oh, nothing now, Watson. Please continue, Miss Stoner.
I have heard, Mr. Holmes, that you can see deeply into the manifold wickedness of the human heart. You may advise me how to walk amid the dangers which encompass me.
I am all attention, madam.
I live with my stepfather, who is the last survivor of one of the oldest Saxon families in England, the Roylets of Stoke Moran, on the western border of Surrey.
The name is familiar to me.
The family was at one time among the richest in England, and the estates extended over 1,000 acres. In the last century, however, 4 successive heirs were of a dissolute and wasteful disposition, and the family fortune is now reduced to nothing save a few acres of ground and the 200-year-old house, which is itself crushed under a heavy mortgage. My stepfather, seeing that he must adapt himself to the new conditions, obtained a medical degree and went out to Calcutta, where he established a large practice. Dr. Roylett married my mother. She was the young widow of Major General Stoner of the Bengal Artillery. My sister, Julia, and I were twins, and we were only 2 years old at the time of my mother's remarriage. We were very happy in India.
Why then did the family return to England?
Well, Dr. Roylett, in a fit of anger, beat his native butler to death and narrowly escaped a capital sentence. He suffered a long term of imprisonment, and upon his release, we returned to England. That was 8 years ago. Shortly after our return, my mother died. She was killed in a railway accident.
And where were you all living at this juncture?
In London. But Dr. Roylett abandoned his attempts to establish himself and practice here, and took us to live with him in the old ancestral house at Stoke Moran. My mother had a considerable sum of money, not less than £1,000 a year, and this she had bequeathed to Dr. Roylett entirely while we resided with him, with a provision that a certain annual sum should be allowed to each of us in the event of our marriage. The money was enough for all our wants, and there seemed to be no obstacle to our happiness.
Watson?
Yes?
A cup of tea now. Dr. Roylett seems to have been quite fortunate in his inheritance, the opportunity to save the family estate.
Yes, but a terrible change came over him about this time. Instead of making friends and exchanging visits with our neighbours, who had at first been overjoyed to see a Roylett of Stoke Moran back in the old family seat, he shut himself up in his house and seldom came out, save to indulge in ferocious quarrels with whoever might cross his path. He became the terror of the village. Folks would fly at his approach, for he is a man of immense strength and absolutely uncontrollable in his anger.
And this behavior continues?
Oh, yes.
Has he no cohorts, friends he visits?
Just the wandering gypsies. He gives them leave to camp on the family estate. What's more, he has a passion for Indian animals. He has at this moment a cheetah and a baboon, which wander freely over the grounds and are feared by the villagers almost as much as he. No servant would stay with us, and for a long time we did all the work of the house. Now that my sister is dead, it all falls to me.
Your sister is dead, then?
She died just 2 years ago, and it is of her death that I wish to speak to you. Julia had gone to our aunt in Harrow 2 years ago, and met there a Mr. Crawley, to whom she became engaged. My stepfather learnt of the engagement when my sister returned and offered no objection to the marriage. But within a fortnight of the day which had been fixed for the wedding, the terrible event occurred which has deprived me of my only companion.
Pray, be precise as to details.
It is easy for me to be so, for every event of that dreadful time is seared into my memory. The manor house is very old, and only one wing is now inhabited. The bedrooms in this wing are on the ground floor. Of these, the first is Dr. Roylett's, the second my sister's, and the third my own. There is no communication between them, but they all open out into the same corridor. Do I make myself plain?
Perfectly so.
The windows of the three rooms open out upon the lawn. That fatal night, Dr. Roylett had gone to his room, as had we.
Helen, may I come in?
Of course, Julia. Let me unlock the door.
I was trying to read, but the smell of those strong Indian cigars...
I thought Dr. Roylett had gone to sleep.
No, perhaps he couldn't sleep. And I shan't be able to until he's done with that cigar. Oh, I did get a letter from Aunt Honoria in the Evening's Post.
And what is her news?
My wedding dress should be completed any day, so she would like me to come next week for a final fitting.
Oh, we shall ask Dr. Roylett if I can join you. Perhaps while there I can meet this Mr. Crawley of yours. After all, he will soon be my brother.
Oh, you will love him as I do. And I can show you the cottage that will be ours. It's quite close to Aunt Honoria's.
Perhaps we can shop for some of the things you will need to set up your new house.
My only regret is leaving you here alone.
Ah, but now I will have you to visit as well as Aunt Honoria, and I am sure the doctor will let me come often.
11 o'clock. Oh, he must be asleep by now.
Yes, but I could talk about your wedding till morning.
Well, I'm off to bed. Tell me, Helen, have you ever heard anyone whistle in the dead of night?
Never.
Well, I suppose you could not possibly whistle yourself in your sleep?
Certainly not. But why?
Because during the last few nights, I've always, about 3 in the morning, heard a low, clear whistle. I'm a light sleeper, and it has awakened me. I cannot tell where it came from. Perhaps from the next room, perhaps from the lawn. I thought I would just ask you whether you had heard it.
No, I have not. It must be those wretched gypsies on the plantation.
Very likely. And yet, if it were on the lawn, I wonder that you did not hear it also.
Ah, but I sleep more heavily than you.
Well, it is of no great consequence at any rate.
She smiled back at me, I closed my door, and a few moments later I heard her key turn in the lock.
Indeed, was it your custom always to lock yourselves in at night?
Always.
And why?
I think that I mentioned to you that the doctor kept a cheetah and a baboon.
Oh, yes.
We had no feeling of security unless our doors were locked.
Yes, quite so. Pray, proceed with your statement.
I could not sleep that night. A vague feeling of impending misfortune impressed me. My sister and I, you will recollect, were twins. And you know how subtle are the links which bind two souls which are so closely allied. It was a wild night. The rain was beating and splashing against the windows.
Julia! Helen! Helen, open the door! Helen, help! Do you hear?
Yes, I hear it. I hear the whistle.
Helen!
Oh, Julia, here, lie down. Doctor, help! Julia, can you hear me? Are you in pain? Julia!
Oh, my God, Helen! It was the band! The speckled band!
What about the speckled band? Are you pointing to Dr. Roylett's room? Dr. Roylett! Yes, Julia, I've called him. Did you hear that clank? He must be bringing something. I'm sure he can help you. Oh, stay with me, Julia. Don't leave me, darling sister.
I have heard.
Oh, Julia, please. Oh, Doctor, come quick! Oh, Julia! Julia! Oh, Doctor, I think she is gone!
Oh, you poor child, what a harrowing experience.
Such was the dreadful end of my beloved sister.
One moment, are you sure about this whistle and metallic sound? Could you swear to it?
That was what the county coroner asked me at the inquiry. It is my strong impression that I heard it, and yet, among the crash of the rain and the creaking of an old house, I may possibly have been deceived.
Was your sister dressed?
No, she was in her nightdress. In her right hand was found the charred stump of a match, and in her left, a matchbox.
Showing that she had struck a light and looked about her when the alarm took place. That is important. And what conclusions did the coroner come to?
He investigated the case with great care, for Dr. Roylett's conduct had long been notorious in the county. But he was unable to find any satisfactory cause of death.
What about the room itself?
All the evidence showed that no one had entry from any method. It was totally secure. It is certain, therefore, that my sister was quite alone when she met her end. Besides, there were no marks of any violence upon her.
How about poison?
The doctors examined her for it, but without success. It is my belief that she died of pure fear and nervous shock, though what it was that frightened her I cannot imagine.
Were there gypsies on the plantation at this time?
Yes, there are nearly always some there.
And what did you gather from this allusion to a band, a speckled band?
Sometimes I have thought that it was merely the wild talk of delirium. Sometimes, perhaps, to these very gypsies on the plantation. I do not know whether the spotted handkerchiefs which so many of them wear over their heads might have suggested the strange adjective which she used.
Yes, these are very deep waters. Pray, go on with your narrative.
2 years have passed since then, and my life has been until lately lonelier than ever. A month ago, however, a dear friend, whom I have known for many years, has done me the honor to ask my hand in marriage. His name is Armitage, Percy Armitage. My stepfather has offered no opposition to the match, and we are to be married in the course of the spring.
May I offer my best wishes?
Thank you, but I am...
What?
Well, 2 days ago, some repairs were started in the west wing of the building, and I had to move into the chamber in which my sister died and to sleep in the very bed in which she slept. Imagine, then, my thrill of terror when last night, as I lay awake, thinking over her terrible fate, I suddenly heard in the silence of the night the low whistle which had been the herald of her own death. I sprang up and lit the lamp, but nothing was to be seen in the room. I was too shaken to go to bed again, so I dressed, and as soon as it was daylight, I made my way here this morning to see you and ask your advice.
You have done wisely, but have you told me all?
Yes, all.
Miss Roylett, you have not. You are screening your stepfather.
Why, what do you mean?
You have been cruelly used. I see 5 little livid bruises. The marks of 4 fingers and a thumb are printed upon your wrist.
He is a hard man, and perhaps he hardly knows his own strength.
This is a very deep business. There are 1,000 details which I should desire to know before I decide upon the course of action. Yet, we have not a moment to lose. If we were to come to Stoke Moran today, would it be possible for us to see those rooms without the knowledge of your stepfather?
As it happens, he spoke of coming into town today upon some most important business. It is probable that he will be away all day and that there would be nothing to disturb you. We have a housekeeper now, but she is old and foolish, and I could easily get her out of the way.
Excellent. You're not averse to this trip, Watson?
No, by no means.
Then we shall both come. What are you going to do with yourself now?
I have 1 or 2 things which I would wish to do now that I'm in town. But I shall return by the 12 o'clock train, so as to be there in time for your coming.
And you may expect us in the early afternoon. I have myself some small business matters to attend to.
My heart has lightened already since I have confided my trouble to you. I shall look forward to seeing you again this afternoon.
Of course. Good day, Miss Stoner.
Good day.
My. She certainly can talk, can't she? I tell Rival's one of the Bronte sisters.
Yes. And what do you make of it all, Watson?
It seems to me to be a most dark and sinister business.
Dark enough and sinister enough.
Yet if the lady is correct in saying that the flooring and walls are sound, and that the door, window, and chimney are impassable, then her sister must have been undoubtedly alone when she met her mysterious end.
What becomes then of those nocturnal whistles, and what of the very peculiar words of the dying woman?
I cannot think.
See, when you combine the ideas of whistles at night, the presence of a band of gypsies who are on intimate terms with the old doctor, the fact that we have every reason to believe that the doctor has an interest in preventing his stepdaughter's marriage, the dying allusion to a band, and finally the fact that Miss Helen Stoner heard a metallic clang, which might have been caused by one of those metal bars that secured the shutters falling back into place. Yes, I think that there's good ground that the mystery may be cleared along those lines.
But what then did the gypsies do?
I cannot imagine.
I see many objections to any such theory.
Ah, so do I. It's precisely for that reason that we are going to Stoke Moran today. I want to see whether these objections are fatal or if they may be explained away. What in the name of the devil?
The ejaculation had been drawn from my companion by the fact that our door had been suddenly dashed open and that a huge man had framed himself in the aperture.
His costume was a peculiar mixture of the professional and of the agricultural. So tall was he that his hat actually brushed the crossbar of the doorway. And his breadth seemed to span it across from side to side.
Which of you is Holmes?
My name, sir, but you have the advantage of me.
And Dr. Grimesby Roylott of Stoke Moran.
Indeed, Doctor, pray take a seat.
I will do nothing of the kind. My stepdaughter has been here. I have traced her. What has she been saying to you?
It is a little cold for the time of the year.
What has she been saying to you?
But I've heard the crocuses promise well.
You put me off, do you? I know you, you scoundrel. I have heard of you before. You are Holmes the meddler. Holmes the busybody. Holmes the Scotland Yard jack in office.
Your conversation is most entertaining. When you go out, close the door, for there is a decided draught.
I will go when I have said my say.
And that is...
Don't you dare to meddle with my affairs. I know that Miss Stoner has been here. I traced her. I am a dangerous man to fall foul of. See here.
Holmes, watch out for the poker.
My strength is well known. See that you keep yourself out of my grip.
He seems a very amiable person.
Amiable?
Amiable, look at what he's done to your poker. He's tied it in a bloody knot. Well, I'm not quite so bulky, but if he had remained, I might have shown him that my grip is not much more feeble than his own. Oh. That's better.
Well done.
Fancy his having the insolence to confound me with the Scotland Yard detective force. But this incident does give zest to our investigation, however, and I can only trust that our little friend will not suffer from her imprudence of allowing this brute to trace her here.
But we are now certain he is in the city.
Yes, Watson, but we are also certain that the old man is aware that we are interesting ourselves in his affairs. This is too serious for dawdling.
Well, what shall we do? It's too early to go anywhere.
Well, we shall order breakfast. And afterwards, I shall walk down to Doctor's Common, where I hope to get some data which may help us in the matter.
And what shall I do?
Well, you shall meet me at the Waterloo Station for the 1:15 train. And Watson, I should be very much obliged if you would slip your revolver into your pocket. An Eli's number 2 pistol is an excellent argument with a gentleman who can twist steel pokers into knots. That and a toothbrush are all I think that we will need.
Yes? As we settled into our seats on the train, Holmes showed me a sheet of blue paper scrawled over with notes and figures.
Yes, I have seen the will of the deceased wife.
And?
To determine the exact meaning, I've been obliged to work out the present prices of the investments which they are concerned with. The total income, which at the time of the wife's death was a little short of £1,100, is now, through the fall of agricultural prices, not more than £750.
Well, that is quite a large drop in value.
Yes, indeed. And each daughter can claim an income of £250 a year in case of marriage. It is evident, therefore, that if both girls had married, this blackguard would have had just a mere pittance. While even one of his daughters getting married would have crippled him quite seriously. My morning's work has not been wasted, since it has proved that he has the very strongest motives for standing in the way of anything of the sort. You're listening to the Gotham Radio Theatre's production of The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, The Case of the Speckled Band, brought to you by Chevrolet.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call.
Thank you, Judy. And Louis. I'm here with Louis Gugliano, who composes all the wonderful music you are hearing tonight.
Thank you, Charles.
You're welcome, Louis. Hey, this might be a perfect time for your hit song, The Gypsy from Poughkeepsie.
A Gypsy from Poughkeepsie, my biggest hit? Sure, I'd be glad to sing that for you. But we ain't got time for that now. Anyway, Poughkeepsie's a long way from Stoke Moran.
Oh, don't I know it.
You must have taught there as Little Louis the boy crooner. Yeah, of Poughkeepsie, I mean, not Stoke Moran.
Ah, sure. I saw the whole country doing the vaudeville circuit. Yeah. Wish I had seen the USA in my Chevrolet, but I was mostly on the Greyhound.
Oh, you mean a dog cart like Helen Stoner arrived in?
No, Charles, I mean a bus.
Oh, yes. I've never traveled much by bus. It's generally the train.
The 20th century?
Yes, Sir Louis, and a nice way to plug Gotham's next show, the 20th century, May 4th and 5th, here at the Arclight.
I got my tickets reserved.
Ah, good man, good man. And speaking of plugs, it's time for Louis to be getting back to the piano and plugging away. Now, before we join Holmes and Watson on their arrival at Stoke Moran, Judy and Louis, how about a few more notes from our sponsor?
So make a date today to see the USA and see it in your Chevrolet.
In Leatherhead, we hired a carriage at the station inn and drove for 4 or 5 miles through the lovely Surrey lanes. It was a perfect day. The trees and wayside hedges were just throwing out their first green shoots, and the air was full of the pleasant smell of the moist earth. But there was a strange contrast between the sweet promise of the spring and the sinister quest upon which we were engaged. My companion sat in the front of the carriage, his arms folded, his hat pulled down over his eyes, and his chin sunk upon his breast, buried in the very deepest thought.
Look there, Watson, at the highest point of those timbered park. You see where it is thickening into a grove?
Ah, yes, I see it. Great gables and a high roof tree, a very old mansion.
Yes, a Stoke Moran driver.
Yes, sir, that be the house of Dr. Bronsby Royett.
Yes, there is some building going on there, and that is where we are going.
There's a village out there to the west, but if you won't get to the house, you'll find it shorter to get over the stile and so by the footpath over the fields. There it is, where the lady is walking.
Yeah, yes, and the lady, I fancy, is Miss Stoney. Yes, I think we'd better do as you suggest, driver.
Ah, here you are.
And here you are, my good man.
Thank you, gentlemen, and God go with you.
I thought it was well the driver should think we had come here as architects or on some definite business. It may stop his gossip. Ah, good afternoon, Miss Roylett. Miss Stoner, I mean. You see that we have been as good as our word?
I have been waiting so eagerly for you. All has turned out splendidly. Dr. Roylett has gone to town, and it is unlikely that he will be back before evening.
Yes, we have had the pleasure of making the doctor's acquaintance.
Good heavens! He has followed me, then.
Ah, so it appears.
Oh, he is so cunning that I never know when I am safe from him. What will he say when he returns?
He must guard himself, for he may find that there is someone more cunning than himself upon his track. You must lock yourself up from him tonight. If he is violent, we shall take you away to your aunts in Harrow. Now, we must make the best use of our time, so kindly take us at once to the rooms in which we are to examine.
The building was of grey, lichen-blotched stone, with a high central portion, and two curving wings like the claws of a crab thrown out on each side. One wing was the picture of ruin, but the central portion was a little better repair, and the right-hand block was comparatively modern. I gathered with the smoke coming up from the chimney that this was where the family resided. Though scaffolding had been erected against the end wall, there were no signs of workmen at the moment of our visit.
This window, I take it, belongs to the room in which you used to sleep. The centre one to your sister's and the one next to that in the main building is Dr. Roylett's chamber?
Exactly so. But I am now sleeping in the middle one.
Right, pending the alterations, as I understand. By the way, there does not seem to be any pressing need for repairs to that end wall.
There were none. I believe that it was an excuse to move me from my room.
Ah, that is very suggestive. Now, on the other side of this narrow wing runs the corridor from which the three rooms open. There are windows in it, of course.
Yes, but very small ones. Too narrow for anyone to pass through.
Yes, and as you both locked your doors at night, your rooms were not approachable from that side. Now, when you left your room, did you bar your shutters?
Of course.
Watson, have you a penknife?
I do.
Examine the hinges and see if they have any fault, either in the metal or in their connection to the wall itself. I shall endeavour to lift the bar from the outside.
Yes, Holmes.
You see, Miss Stoner, it is sometimes possible to insert something between the wooden slats and thus raise the bar.
No, nothing amiss here.
No. My theory certainly presents some difficulties. No one could pass through these shutters when they are bolted. Well, we shall see if the inside throws any light upon the matter.
Right this way, Mr. Holmes. Dr. Watson.
Now, there is no need to look at your original room, Miss Stoner. Let us go directly to the room in which you are now staying.
Here you are. It's a very simple room.
Yes. It is a gaping fireplace.
Yes, but if you peer in, you may be able to see the bars atop it.
Ah, yes. And the furniture has not changed in the 2 years since your sister's death? The same chest of drawers, bed, dressing table, and those two wicker work chairs?
All the furniture is the same. Nothing has been changed in any way.
The boards round and the panelling of the walls are brown, worm-eaten oak. So old and discoloured. Does it date from the original building of the house?
Well, I don't really know, Doctor, but the police have checked and they are sound.
What does that bell ring?
It goes to the housekeeper's room.
It looks newer than the other things.
Yes, it was only put there a couple of years ago.
Your sister asked for it, I suppose?
No, I never heard of her using it. We used always to get what we wanted for ourselves.
Indeed, it seemed unnecessary to put so nice a bell pull there. Watson, notice how thick the bell rope is. And then it hangs long. You see, the tassel is actually lying upon the pillow of the bed.
Yes.
Miss Stoner, am I correct in assuming you have not used it since moving into this room?
No, I have not.
Then we shall give it a pull. Ha! It's a dummy.
Why, won't it ring?
No, it's not even attached to a wire. This is very interesting. You can see now that it is fastened to a hook just above where that little opening for the ventilator is.
How very absurd. I never noticed that before.
It's very strange. There are one or two very singular points about this room. For example, what a fool a builder must be to open a ventilator into another room when at the same trouble he might have communicated with the outside air.
That is also quite modern.
Done about the same time as the bell rope?
Yes, there were several little changes carried out about that time.
Yes, they seem to have been of a most interesting character. Dummy bell ropes and ventilators which do not ventilate. With your permission, Miss Turner, we shall now carry our researches into the doctor's inner apartment.
Dr. Grimesby Roylott's chamber was larger than that of his stepdaughter, but was as plainly furnished. A camp bed, a small wooden shelf of books, mostly of a technical character, an armchair beside the bed, a plain wooden chair against the wall, round table, and a large iron safe were the principal things which met the eye. Holmes walked slowly round and examined each and all of them with the keenest interest.
Miss Turner, what is in this safe?
My stepfather's business papers.
Oh, you have seen inside them?
Only once, some years ago. I remember that it was full of papers.
There isn't a cat in it, for example?
No, what a strange idea.
Well, look at this. There is a small saucer of milk on the top of it.
No, we don't keep a cat. But there is a cheetah and a baboon.
Ah, yes, of course. Well, a cheetah is just a big cat, and yet a saucer of milk does not go very far in satisfying its wants, I dare say.
Is the cheetah allowed in the house?
No, of course not. What is Mr. Holmes doing now?
Oh, merely examining the seat of this wooden chair. Has it always been here, Miss Stoner?
I don't believe it has, although I suppose it might be from another room in the house.
Yes, thank you. That is quite settled. Hello, here is something interesting. No dog here either, is there?
No.
What do you make of that, Watson?
Oh, it's a common enough leash. But I don't know why it should be curled upon itself and tied so as to make a loop of whipcord.
Yes, that is not quite so common, is it? Ah me, it is a wicked world, and when a clever man turns his brain to crime, it is the worst of all. I think I've seen enough now, Miss Stone, and with your permission, we shall walk out upon the lawn.
Of course.
It is very essential, Miss Stoner, that you should absolutely follow my advice in every respect.
I shall most certainly do so.
The matter is too serious for any hesitation. Your life may depend upon your compliance.
I assure you that I am in your hands.
In the first place, both my friend and I must spend the night in your room.
Oh, no! Really, Holmes?
Yes, it must be so. Let me explain, Miss Stoner. I believe that is the Village Inn over there?
Yes, that is the Crown.
Very good. Your windows would be visible from there.
Certainly, from the third or fourth floors.
Very good. You must confine yourself to your room on the pretense of a headache when your stepfather comes back. Then, when you hear him retire for the night, you must open the shutters of your window, undo the hasp, put your lamp there as a signal to us, and then withdraw quietly with everything you are likely to want into the room you used to occupy. I have no doubt that in spite of the repairs, you could manage there for one night.
Oh, yes, easily.
Yes. The rest you will leave in our house.
But what will you do?
Well, we shall spend the night in your room and we shall investigate investigate the cause of this noise whistle that has disturbed you.
I believe, Mr. Holmes, that you have already made up your mind.
Perhaps I have.
Then for pity's sake, tell me, what was the cause of my sister's death?
I should prefer to have cleared up proofs before speaking.
You can at least tell me whether my own thought is correct, and if she died from some sudden fright.
No, I do not think so. I think there is probably a more tangible cause. And now, Miss Stoner, we must leave you. For if Dr. Roylott returned and saw us, our journey would be in vain. Goodbye, and be brave. For if you will do what I have told you, you may rest assured that we shall soon drive away the dangers that threaten you.
Don't worry, Miss Stoner. Holmes is always true to his word.
Thank you both.
I had never seen my friend's face so grim, or his brow so dark as it was when we left Miss Stoner. Not wanting to break in upon his thoughts before he roused himself from his reverie, Holmes and I walked to the Crown Inn in silence.
Coming, coming. Well, gentlemen, and what can I be doing for you on this nice spring day?
We require a bedroom and sitting room for the night.
Oh, I have a quiet room in the back, looking over our lovely gardens. They're just coming into bloom.
Actually, our rooms must be in the front, overlooking the street. Yeah. And we prefer to be on the third or fourth floor, please. Yeah.
Whatever you like. And you say you only need one bedroom.
Yes, that will do.
Yeah. Room 306 will suit you then. Your key, sir.
Thank you.
I shall have the boy fetch up your luggage.
We have no luggage.
Oh. No luggage?
Ah, my good man. Please take this on account. And send up some tea. Well, we prefer India to China and would like some sandwiches, yes? And some cakes?
Whatever you say, sir. Hurry up, boy!
Yes, sir, Dr.
Oh, he's a fierce man, that one.
And who is he?
Dr. Grimesby Roylott, own Stokeland Manor House across the way. Can't you even open the gate? Out of the way! I should take a whip to you instead of paying you.
They're through the gate now. What a pity, that poor boy.
And well, you're sure he's a dangerous man, always ready to start a fight. Are you sure you don't want a room in the back?
Well, thank you, but 306 will do fine.
Pity. I'll have the tea sent right up, gentlemen.
The room was quite comfortable, and we enjoyed the excellent tea that was set up, with one eye always watching out the window. As we sat together in the gathering darkness, we saw the light go on in Roylott's window.
Do you know, Watson? I really have some scruples about taking you tonight. There is a distinct element of danger.
Oh, can I be of assistance?
Oh, your presence might be invaluable.
Well, then I shall certainly come.
That's very kind of you.
You speak of danger. You have evidently seen more in those rooms than was visible to me.
No, but I fancy that I may have deduced a little more. I knew that we should find a ventilator before we ever came to Stoke Moran.
No, Holmes, really?
No, yes, I did. You remember in her statement she said that her sister could smell Dr. Roylott's cigar. Now, of course, that would suggest that at once there must be a communication between the two rooms. And it could only be a small one, or it would have been remarked upon in the coroner's inquiry. I deduce a ventilator.
But what harm can there be in that?
Well, there is at least a curious coincidence of dates. A ventilator is made, a cord is hung, and the lady who sleeps in the bed dies. Does not that strike you, Watson?
I cannot as yet see the connection.
Did you observe anything very peculiar about the bed?
No.
It was clamped to the floor. Do you ever see a bed fastened like that before?
I cannot say that I have.
The lady could not have moved her bed. It must always stay in the relative position to the ventilator and to the rope. Assuming we call it, since it's clearly never meant to be a bell.
Holmes, I seem to see dimly what you are hinting at. We are only just in time to prevent some subtle and horrible crime.
Yes, when a doctor does go wrong, he is the first of criminals. He has nerve and he has knowledge. I think we'll have some horrors before the night is over. But for goodness sake, let us have a quiet pipe and turn our minds for a few hours to something more restful.
About 9 o'clock, the light among the trees was extinguished, and all was dark in the direction of the manor house. Then, suddenly, just at the stroke of 11, a single bright light shone out in front of us. Holmes sprung to his feet, and I followed. A moment later, we were out on the dark road, with one yellow light twinkling in front of us through the gloom to guide us on our somber errand.
Well, we do have to thank Dr. Royler for being careless enough to leave all these unrepaired breaches gaping in the old estate wall.
Yeah, but the slapdash way he cares for the lawn doesn't make travelling across it so easy.
I know, but once in Miss Stoner's room, we must sit without light. He would see it through the ventilator.
Yes, I understand.
Do not go to sleep, Watson. Your very life may depend upon it. And have your pistol ready in case we should need it. I will have my cane and a box of matches and a stump of candle ready.
Look, do you see it? It seems to be a hideous and distorted child. upon the grass with writhing. It's coming this way. No, there it goes. Across the lawn to the darkness.
It is a nice household. Watson, that is the baboon.
I'd forgotten the strange pets with which the doctor affected. Oh, isn't it? There are cheetah too.
Yes. Then let us get into the room with dispatch. And remove your shoes before climbing in. The least sound will be fatal to our plans.
You shall not hear a sound from me.
You go in first and sit in one of the wicker chairs facing the bed. And have your gun ready. I shall follow, close the shutters, and sit on the side of the bed by the rope. Ready?
Yes. We enter the room silently. And once we had taken our places, Holmes turned down the lamp. And we were left in darkness. How shall I ever forget that dreadful vigil? I could not hear a sound, not even the drawing of a breath. And yet I knew that my companion sat within a few feet of me, open-eyed, in the same state of nervous tension in which I was myself. Far away we could hear the deep tones of the parish clock. 12 struck, 1, 2, 3, and still we sat waiting silently for whatever might befall. Suddenly, there was a momentary gleam of light up in the direction of the ventilator, and then a gentle sound of movement, and then...
Ready now, Watson. You see it, Watson? You see it?
No, I see nothing.
Careful, Watson. Stand back.
What are you lashing at?
Ah, success. It is heading back through the ventilator.
What is that?
It means that it is all over and is for the best. Take your pistol. We will now enter Dr. Roylet's room.
Dr. Roylet, open!
Watson, look! The band, the speckled band. See it around his brow? A peculiar yellow band with brownish speckles.
Dr. Roylet! Holmes, look at him. His chin is cocked upward and his eyes are fixed in a dreadful, rigid stare at the corner of the ceiling. I'll go check on him.
No, stop, Watson! Look, the band. It's moving.
Wait, it's a serpent. A diamond-shaped head. Neck, Holmes, do you know what it is?
Yes, it's a swamp adder, the deadliest snake in India. Though there's no need to check on him, he has died within 10 seconds of being bitten. Violence does in truth recoil upon the violent, and the schemer falls into the pit which he digs for another. Come, let us thrust this creature back into its den, and we can then remove Miss Stoner to some place of shelter, and let the county police know what has happened.
Well, grab the dog whip carefully, the snake is so close.
Got it. Now, be ready to close the safe door as soon as I put him in.
Yes.
Now!
Such are the true facts of the death of Dr. Grimesby Roylott of Stoke Moran. They say that way down in the village, and even in the distant parsonage, that cry raised the sleepers from their beds. We broke the sad news to the terrified girl and conveyed it by the morning train to the care of her good aunt at Harrow.
Gentlemen, it is so kind of you to travel with me.
It has been a harrowing few days. We are delighted that the outcome has freed you from your stepfather.
Yes, I come to an entirely erroneous conclusion, which shows, my dear Watson, how dangerous it always is to reason from insufficient data.
Whatever do you mean?
From the presence of the gypsies and the use of the word band, which was used by your poor sister, no doubt to explain the snake's appearance, which if caught a hurried glimpse of by the light of her match, was sufficient to put me onto an entirely wrong scent.
Yes, but you readily shifted your thoughts once you arrived at the manor.
Yes, but it became clear to me that whatever danger threatened an occupant of the room could not have come either from the window or the door. My attention was speedily drawn to that ventilator and to the bell rope which was hung down to the bed. The discovery that it was a dummy and that the bed was clamped to the floor instantly gave rise to the suspicion that the rope was there as a bridge for something passing through the ventilator and coming to the bed.
So you had already thought of a snake when you decided to stay the night in my room?
Indeed, Miss Stoner, and when I coupled it with what you told me about the doctor's supply of creatures from India, I felt that I was probably on the right track. The idea of using a form of poison which could not possibly be discovered by any chemical test was just such a one as would occur to a clever and ruthless doctor who had had an Eastern training. Furthermore, it would be a sharp-eyed coroner who could distinguish the two dark little punctures in which it would show where the poison fangs had done their work.
What about the whistle?
Ah, the whistle. He must recall the snake before the morning light revealed it to the victim. He had trained it, probably by the use of the milk which we saw, to return to him when summoned. He would put it through that ventilator at the hour that he thought best, with the certainty that it would crawl down the rope and land on the bed. It might or might not bite the occupant. Perhaps she would escape every night for a week, but sooner or later, she must fall victim to it.
How terrible.
Yes, I had come to these conclusions before I ever entered his room. An inspection of his chair showed that he had been in the habit of standing on it, which, of course, would be necessary in order that he should reach the ventilator. The sight of the safe, the saucer of milk, the loop of whipcord, were enough to finally dispel any doubts which may have remained. Oh, and the metallic clang that you and your sister heard was obviously caused by your stepfather hastily closing the door of his safe on that terrible occupant.
Yes, even with this knowledge, your plan was very dangerous.
Yes, but Watson, you're up to the task. I heard the creatures hiss, as I have no doubt you also did, and I instantly lit the light and attacked it.
With the result of driving it back through the ventilator.
Yes, and also with the result of causing it to turn upon its master at the other side. Some of the blows of my cane came home and roused its snakish temper, so it flew upon the first person it saw. In this way, I am no doubt indirectly responsible for Dr. Grimesley Roylet's death.
My dear Mr. Holmes, you are directly responsible for saving mine.
Ah. A life worth saving. And I cannot say that Dr. Roylet's death is likely to weigh very heavily upon my conscience.
Remember...